Friends, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
This is VOA Sunny Young in Washington. Welcome to the Sunny Side of Sports. This evening, we look at some of the Olympic highlights from 2018. And my VOA colleague, Gwen Uten, says she'll begin with this year's Winter Games in South Korea. Sporty greetings, Gwen!
Sporty greetings, Sonny. In February, the famous trumpet fanfare signaled the start of the 23rd Olympiad in Pyeongchang, a place where several African athletes made history and inspired millions around the world. Akwasi Frimpong became the first Olympic athlete to represent Ghana in the skeleton event. And although he finished in last place, Akwasi made his country very proud. On the women's side, Simadeli Adeogun made her Olympic debut as the first Nigerian to compete in the skeleton event. She says her journey to the Olympics began with her desire to change the narrative around Africa. And despite finishing in last place, Simadeli says her sights are already set on the Beijing Winter Olympics in 2022. Nigeria was also represented by the women's bobsledding trio of Seun Adigun, Akuoma Omioga, and team captain Ngozi Anmuwere. Their journey to the Olympic Games began with a GoFundMe campaign, and they ended up the first athletes to represent Africa in their sport. Seun Adigun says she believes her team has left a legacy, not only in her country, but around the world.
You know, I think that what we've done has set the groundwork for how people will now get into the sport, and it has started a wave. Since before we even got to this point, the inquiries that were coming in, the interest of people from not only homegrown within Nigeria, but within the diaspora that are now encouraged to do something all over the world, from Africa, from everywhere. So we're really, really excited about the outlook that this year has set for everyone else.
Eight African countries competed in Pyeongchang, the highest number in Winter Olympics history. And while we have yet to see an athlete bring home a medal for Africa, history could be made again in 2022. 17-year-old Korean-American Chloe Kim also made history as the youngest female snowboarder to win Olympic gold after dominating the women's halfpipe event. Chloe said she's proud to represent both the United States and South Korea and to come out on top in such an exciting sport.
Women's snowboarding has progressed at such a fast pace that it's just such an honor to be a part of that. And, you know, I feel like there's going to be some cool tricks in the next Olympics. So it's exciting to think about.
Chloe added to her gold medal 3 ESPY Awards, winning Best Female Action Sports Athlete, Best U.S. Female Olympian, and the biggie, Best Female Athlete of 2018. History was also made on the men's side of that same event. American halfpipe snowboarder Sean White took home 3 gold medals and sealed his legacy as the most successful snowboarder of all time, a feat Sean could barely believe himself.
3-time Olympic gold medalist, man, you know, this honestly, I'm sure you can tell by my reactions at the bottom of the pipe, but this meant the world to me and my family and my team. And, you know, here doing it for USA again, not only to be an Olympian again, but to be a gold medalist again is just unreal. And, I'm proud of myself.
And in an example of the unifying power of the Olympic Games, athletes from North and South Korea marched together in the opening ceremony under one unified flag. The two Koreas have since agreed to pursue a joint bid to co-host the 2032 Olympic Games and will jointly participate in the upcoming 2020 Games in Tokyo. You're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. Well, with the Pyeongchang Winter Olympic Games in the history books, it was time to look ahead to the 2020 Summer Olympic Games in Tokyo, Japan. Preparations are already well underway, and IOC President Thomas Bach said he cannot remember any Olympic city being so well prepared in advance of the Games. There are many concerns regarding Tokyo's ability to host the Games in extreme summer temperatures. However, Thomas Bach said the organizing committee is working closely with medical experts to ensure everyone at the Games is protected.
You can be sure that these measures will be applied to protect everybody. There, not only the athletes, in particular the athletes, of course, but also the spectators and every participant in these Olympic Games.
Under the recommendation of health experts, the IOC has also proposed earlier start times for the men's and women's marathon to minimize the risk of heat stroke. John Coates, chairman of the IOC's Coordination Commission for Tokyo 2020, says the health of competitors and spectators has always been a top priority in past and present games.
In previous Olympics, we've studied it, and we've got Athens 36 degrees. So it will continue to be front of mind for us and the organisers, and front of mind for the teams that are coming here, and we'll do everything possible to ensure that they're not competing at risk.
Also in 2018, the IOC received support for the creation of a refugee team for the 2020 Tokyo Olympics. The refugee Olympic team will compete for a second consecutive Summer Games, and over 50 Olympic athletes are already in contention for a spot in Tokyo. It was also announced Senegal will host the next edition of the Youth Olympic Games in 2022. Botswana, Nigeria, and Tunisia also bid for a hosting spot, but Senegal beat the competition in a unanimous decision. It will mark the first time in history Africa will host any Olympic Games. As I've mentioned, the 2022 Winter Olympic Games will take place in Beijing, where 7 new competitive events will be added. Those events include big air freestyle skiing for men and women and mixed team events. Female athletes will get a nice boost in representation compared to 2018. The new additions will increase the total number of women's events to 46. However, in an effort to cut costs and improve gender balance at the Olympics, there will be 41 fewer athletes overall in 2022 compared to 2018. Beijing's weather is relatively warm in the winter months, with minimal snowfall in the mountains. So for the 2022 Games, Beijing will reportedly rely completely on artificial snow. And although it's not great for the environment, professional skiers actually prefer the firmer consistency of the fake stuff. Beijing 2022 will see a bump in fake snow from the 2018 Winter Games. Pyeongchang depended on snow that was only 98% man-made. You're tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. 50 years ago, at the 1968 Summer Olympics in Mexico City, American sprinters Tommy Smith and John Carlos turned their gold and bronze medal ceremony into one of the greatest political protests in Olympic history. As they stood on the podium, the two men bowed their heads and raised their gloved fists in a cry for freedom and human rights. In 2018, both men received the Free Expression Award, and in his acceptance speech, Tommy Smith called on others to join in the fight for equality.
In the face of adversity, the struggle continues. Now, there's many of us look for comfort in non-involvement. But see, you can run, but you cannot hide.
John Carlos marked the anniversary with a return to the very track where the protest took place in Mexico City's Olympic Stadium. He reflected on how one powerful moment can change history.
23 years, that's not a whole bunch of time to dilate and configure in your mind. What can you do to change the course of history based on what you've experienced in your 23 years? Don't think that you have to wait until you're 55 or 60 years old to make a statement to try and make change in society. You can start right now.
In 1968, Australian sprinter Peter Norman, the silver medalist in the race and often regarded as the forgotten man, stood on the medal podium in full support of the protest. Afterwards, all three men were strongly condemned for their actions by the International Olympic Committee, and the athletes never ran in an Olympic event again. Peter Norman died in 2006. Tommy Smith and John Carlos served as pallbearers at his funeral. 6 years later, the Australian Parliament issued an apology for the ill treatment Norman endured upon his return to Australia in 1968, and for its failure to recognize his achievements in sport and the role he played in the advancement of racial equality. A statue of all three men now stands in Smithsonian's National Museum of African American History and Culture, right here in Washington, D.C. You can see a picture of that statue and the iconic photograph from the 1968 Olympics on Sonny's blog at blogs.voanews.com/Sonny. Sonny, back over to you.
Thanks, Gwen. That's my VOA colleague, Gwen Uten. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America.
Twelve years ago, Toby Dawson won a bronze medal for the United States in the freestyle skiing moguls event at the Winter Olympics in Turin, Italy. Flash forward to the 2018 Winter Games in Pyeongchang, and the now 38-year-old Dawson coached the host South Korean team in the same event he competed in. It's being described as a remarkable homecoming for Dawson, who in 2007 met his biological father for the first time in Seoul, South Korea's capital. And here's how Toby begins his remarkable homecoming story.
The story goes, I was in open-air market with my mother, and she was out purchasing food for the family to fill the refrigerator. And she had turned around with her wallet to pay for some food or some produce that she had been buying at one of the booths. And I guess I just wandered off. And when she turned around to look for me, she couldn't find me, and she spent, you know, the next couple of hours looking around for me and was never successful in finding me. Later, I guess I was probably taken to a policeman or something, and then the policeman brought me to an orphanage, and I sat in an orphanage for about 4 or 5 months. And after that, I was adopted and ended up in Vail, Colorado by two ski instructors named Mike and Deborah Dawson.
Mike and Deborah Dawson taught Toby how to ski. In fact, his first taste of mountain slopes was whizzing down them in his adopted father's backpack. Toby says after he won the Olympic bronze medal in 2006, it created a media frenzy in South Korea.
Well, it's funny. I never was personally interested in meeting my biological parents, but my mom always wanted me to, and she thought that it would be such a wonderful thing for me to be able to meet my biological parents. And so she was always secretly rooting for me to make it to the Olympics because she thought that would be the platform for me to actually be reunited with my biological parents. And, you know, I guess that motherly intuition is correct. By going to the Olympics and receiving a medal, and then there was a big Korean buzz about it. And a lot of media came forward because I am full Korean in blood. They were very excited because they've never had like a medal in ski or snowboard history. So it was a big story here in Korea. And a lot of people started coming forward and saying that I was related or either they were my parents. And that's kind of how the whole thing got started.
A man from South Korea's southern city of Busan came forward and said he was Toby's biological father, and a DNA test confirmed his claim. In February 2007, the two had a very public reunion, a news conference attended by dozens of reporters and TV crews. Toby says their reunion was difficult for him, not joyful.
To be honest, it was hard. It was very surreal. It's hard to actually be emotional at that point because you know you're being under the microscope of so many people watching you at the same time. So I think that I was slightly emotional or emotionless at the moment. But after being able to, like, you know, kind of get comfortable with the situation and obviously looking at my dad for quite a bit of time, you know, realizing, you know, very similar facial structure and, like, the same kind of facial hair, which is not very common in Korea, I was like, wow, this is kind of like looking into a mirror when I'm much older.
Toby Dawson also met his biological mother a few years ago. He describes his relationship with his biological parents and his adoptive parents.
I have two amazing, wonderful parents in the United States, and that's more than enough for me. And this is kind of, you know, all the extra. So if the story doesn't fit together, it's not a big deal. I still have a decent relationship with both of them. I still communicate with them through text messaging and phone calls and things of that nature. And my my full biological brother, I still keep in contact with him, and we talk and communicate pretty well. So I've just added to my family, really. It's nothing, no hard feelings or anything like that. I'm happy with the situation, and I don't hold anything against them.
Toby Dawson says he's grateful Mike and Deborah Dawson adopted him.
Man, I'm so lucky to grow up in the United States. What a wonderful place to grow up with such loving parents and to have all these amazing opportunities to be able to represent the United States as an Olympian, to be able to be a final presenter and help Korea win the bid for the Pyeongchang Olympics, to become a national team coach and walk in with all the Korean athletes and then also the North Korean athletes in the opening ceremonies and to coaching these athletes into the Olympic Games. I've had so many cool opportunities. I've had so many cool situations in my life because of being adopted.
That's 2006 Olympic bronze medalist Toby Dawson. Toby coached the South Korean mogul ski team at the Pyeongchang Olympics. And as Toby mentioned, he also helped South Korea win the 2018 Winter Olympics as a member of the country's bid team. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to The Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. The VOA's Jim Stevenson joins us now with more 2018 Winter Olympics highlights.
The U.S. push for gold began with an unlikely champion, Red Gerard, who, like most of his rivals in men's slopestyle snowboarding, suffered falls during the finals. Gerard was in 11th place before embarking on his last run, a spectacular effort, twisting, turning, and flipping through the air before making perfect landings down the course. He told VOA after the event, that's all he was trying to do.
I cannot believe it. I cannot believe it all worked out. I was just so happy to land a run and to make it on the podium. I'm ecstatic. I'm so excited.
Gerard didn't think he would make the final at the Olympics, much less win gold. He says his more experienced and favored Canadian competitors were happy for his win in his first Olympic appearance.
They were all so excited. It was awesome. We're all friends out there. So, I think they were just really happy that we all landed runs.
Then, exciting action on the highly technical and unforgiving luge track.
It was such a close race. It wasn't like any other Olympics.
Chris Madser captured the first men's singles luge medal in U.S. history to end a 54-year medal drought for Team USA. Madser put together two phenomenal runs to climb from fourth to third in runs 3 and 4. The next day, he told the media his achievement was just beginning to sink in.
I really didn't sleep very much. It's a bigger moment than I thought. It was huge.
Madser carried down the twisting, icy course, the dreams of so many U.S. sliders before him.
It's all about passion. It's about heart. That's what luge is. So I've had almost 60 years of people putting their lives, sacrificing so much into this. And for me to be that person that finally breaks through is, it really is, it's special for me, but it's just a way that I can say thanks to everyone that's put me into this position.
Meanwhile, skiers had to wait for their chance at medals. High winds caused several postponements of alpine ski races. Double extreme skiing world champion Chris Davenport explains the dangers to skiers and snowboarders.
When the wind comes up, it can really get in the way of your performance. So it becomes not only mentally really challenging, but while you're in the air doing it, and a gust comes up, it can actually be dangerous. It can blow you off your line. You can land on the lip, or you land short, or in the case of a downhill ski race, landing too far 100 meters down the hill and crashing.
Austrian ski star Marcel Hirscher says the longer, faster races are most at risk.
It will be more problem for the downhill and for the super G than, for example, for slalom. In slalom, it is not that important that it is there is no wind. But for the downhill, it is nearly a need to have fair races that there is at least the same wind. At the moment, it is changing a lot.
Hirscher got his chance to go down the men's slalom course and claim the first gold medal of his career. Chris Davenport says the persistent conditions are threatening to disrupt the Olympic schedule.
The Olympics happens during a finite window of time. There is pressure to get these events off. You can't just keep postponing and postponing. So if it seems like you can run it and you can run it safely, you have to run it. And yeah, it might not be fair for all the athletes, but that's the way it is, and that's the way sports is.
IOC President Thomas Bach has no worries about the events.
The games are off to a great start, and these cancellations, they do not worry us at all. The international federations with whom we have talked, they have told us, listen, there is no reason to worry. We still have 2 weeks to go.
As for the possibility of warmer political winds blowing across the Korean Peninsula, Bach says the presence of the Olympics has already played its role.
Now, it's for politics to take over. You know, sport cannot create peace, and we cannot lead their political negotiations. We have sent this message that a dialogue, that negotiations can lead to a positive result. And now it's up to the political side to use this momentum.
Bach does plan to visit North Korea at Pyongyang's invitation after the Winter Olympics are over.
We'll continue also after the Olympic flame has extinguished.
Nathan Chen is a two-time U.S. national champion in men's singles figure skating. He is also the first international skater to complete 5 quadruple jumps in his long program. Chen is the son of Chinese immigrants. Born in Salt Lake City, Utah, he grew up in the shadow of the Olympic cauldron from the 2002 Winter Games. He fell in love with skating when his siblings took him to a public skating session when he was just 3 years old. Now, Chen is a 2-time U.S. national champion and one of a handful of skaters worldwide who can land quadruple jumps, 4 quick rotations in the air. Chen says he's not nervous or intimidated by the high-profile Olympic competition.
As soon as I'm on the ice and doing the program that I'm planning out to do, it'll be the same as any other competition. It'll be the same as practice, and that's what I'm focusing on.
Chen also trained in ballet and gymnastics as a child. He says his early dance training gave him a foundation for his moves and often helped his work on the ice. Nathan Chen says that he's proud to represent the United States as a Chinese American.
I'm very proud of myself for being able to go to the Olympics, represent Team USA as a Chinese American. Honestly, just really excited to get out there. I have to focus on myself before I even think about medals, so that's what I'll do.
And thanks to my VOA colleague, Jim Stevenson, for that spicy Olympic report. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to The Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America.
Voice of America!
This Voice of America programming note, on Tuesday, Christmas Day, my VOA colleague Gwen Uten will be back for a look at some of the big stories at this year's World Cup football tournament in Russia. France won its second World Cup title on July 15th in Moscow, where it defeated Croatia 4-2 in the final. While the Croatians didn't lift the cup, the country's fans had a lot to cheer about, and so did team captain Luka Modric, who was named the World Cup's best player, as well as the best FIFA men's player for 2018 and the Ballon d'Or winner for 2018. And that wraps up the December 24th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Bill Werkinger, and thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, And that's the sunny side of sports.
Hello, I'm Linor Moudou, host of Health Chat. Join us on Health Chat Tuesday as we discuss alcohol consumption and how to be safe this holiday season. Our guest is Dr. George Cope, director of the U.S. National Institute on Alcohol Abuse and Alcoholism. For your questions, email us at healthchat@voanews.com. You can also reach us by phone to leave a message. Dial the international code for the United States, then dial 202-205-9942. The U.S. country code is 1. Dial 45 after you hear the station ID. Health Chat this Tuesday at 1730 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, Africa. This is James Barty, host of Daybreak Africa, inviting you to join me every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC as we bring you the latest in African news, features, and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our listener mail segment by sending your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. You can also call us and leave us a voicemail at 202-205-9942. That's 202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. Start your day with Daybreak Africa every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC on the Voice of America.
This is Science in a Minute.
Researchers in Utah say what might be the world's largest organism is dying, but could be saved with what they call a mega conservation effort. The Pando aspen clone looks like a forest of trees, but since each of the trees is linked by common genetic markers and possibly one giant root system, scientists consider it to be a single giant living organism. Paul Rogers and Darren McAvoy from Utah State University say they have performed the first complete assessment of the Pando aspen, which is located in Utah's Fish Lake National Forest. They found that much of the Pando colony is failing, although a previously restored section of the clone trees continues to recover. The study suggests the thinning of the aspen clones is due to human development and damage caused by local wildlife such as the mule deer. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
VOA Africa has built a successful, effective social media strategy through Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and other digital platforms. We are responding to our audience on the African continent and in the global diaspora. We believe in the power of connection and interaction to bring you news that is comprehensive, accurate, and objective. We see the changes in technology as an opportunity to engage with our audiences about the issues that affect them. At VOA Africa, we don't just report the news, we help shape the conversation on the continent. VOA, your trusted source for news and information.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bonga flavor to soukous, afrobeat to ndombolo and makossa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.
We are always glad to have our listeners throughout Africa tuning in to our newscasts covering Africa and the world news. Tune in on top of each hour, 24/7. VOA is your trusted source of news and information.